Cocktail Nation on WXLV Schnecksville, Pennsylvania. VX.
Now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. We need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Feeling a little exposed and embarrassed after I shared a very personal secret with my childhood friend Julian Assange. Who would have thought that he would become such a big mouth? On the show this week, we talked to Boyd Anderson, the author of Errol Fidel and the Cuban Rebel Girls. Stacks of events to attend, including some great end-of-year parties for you. Our segment, Ask Coop, and the look at the world of blogs with our blogosphere. Very cool one from a very popular and favourite vodcaster of mine. We have a giveaway this week from Royal Crown Review, their new album, Don't Be a Grinch, this year, so stand by for that one. Now, as most of you know, Mr. Ho's Orchestrotica is currently promoting its big band release, The Unforgettable Sounds of Esquivel. Right now, however, the second release in the Exotica for Modern Living series is coming out. It's coming out May 31, and it's actually featuring a holiday-ish type track, which Mr. Ho thought he would leak to me before the CD is officially out. Arab Dance from the Nutcracker is the cut. The Third River Rangoon CD and download are available now as a pre-sale for the reduced price of just $10 at orchestrotica.com or tikijazz.com. Pretty excited about this one. Here it is, Arab Dance on the Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation. Thanks to Tiki Shark.
For Tiki Shark with the new Morty Show in Tico Tico. Well, a great book that I've been reading recently is Errol Fidel and the Cuban Rebel Girls. Cuba, 1959 is when it's set, the final year of Errol Flynn's life, but he managed to find time for one last adventure. The dashing star of many Hollywood films had always longed to be a real hero, and Fidel Castro, well, he was the real deal, so about time they hook up. What each man wanted from each other, I suppose, was fame. Errol headed down there looking to meet Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro, happy to do some interviews. Cuba is on the brink of revolution. Errol Flynn's there making what will be the final film. When they meet, Errol is involved in the latest of a long line of relationships with underage women, while Fidel is ready to march triumphantly into Havana. On the line, author Boyd Anderson. Now, Boyd, at the time of this book, Errol Flynn's career pretty much is dead in the water, isn't it?
Dead in the water, yes. That's a pretty good description. Yep.
And he was right. At the time he was escaping, he was pretty much exiled from the US because of tax issues and his very, very young girlfriend. And his wife, who was busy chasing him for money as well.
Well, that was his first wife, yes. She was still chasing him probably about 20 years after they divorced. She was still chasing him, yes.
Wow. Now, I'm fascinated by this book because I'm having to be a big Errol Flynn fan. I read the book My Wicked, Wicked Ways.
Ah, yes, what a good book.
Yeah, and I can definitely tell that to get inside the head of Errol Flynn, I gather you probably read that book.
Yes. I read that book actually when I was 10.
Really?
Yeah, my mother had a copy of it, and I used to sneak it off her bookshelf and read it at night.
Racy stuff.
It took me more than a year because I used to read little bits of it every now and again. I was aware of the fact that I shouldn't be reading it.
Yeah. Now, the whole premise is, how did Errol end up in Cuba? Let's examine that, because he's basically living in Jamaica, yeah. And suddenly he decides to go to Cuba to film.
Yeah. He used to spend a lot of time in Cuba, as all those Hollywood film stars used to. Back in the 40s and 50s, they used to go down to Cuba until it got a bit hot. I mean, I say that, I mean the political climate got a bit too hot.
Yeah.
Bombs going off in the streets and things like that. He hadn't been there for a few years, and he got interested in the revolution. He got interested in... He read about a particular battle, which was a battle in the Sierra Maestra, the mountains where Castro was. And the story was that Castro had 300 soldiers, and that Batista, the president, had sent 10,000 government soldiers in there to ferret him out. And the 10,000 soldier army had been beaten by the 300 soldier army. Now, that is a fact. That is what, when I say it's a fact, that's the legend. That's the way it was reported.
Right.
Well, of course, those numbers, 10,000 being beaten by 300, has a classical ring to it. It's the Battle of Thermopylae.
Mm.
The Greeks and the Spartans and the Persians. And Errol was a bit of an amateur classical scholar. He'd read all the Greek classics. He'd read all the French humanists and the German philosophers and so on. He'd always hankered after... he regretted not pursuing a formal education.
Mm.
He got expelled from too many schools and didn't do particularly well scholastically, and never completed his formal education. His father was very well academically qualified. He was a professor of marine biology.
Yeah.
In fact, was probably the world's foremost authority in marine biology. And he thought he'd sort of missed a trick there.
Mm.
And he recognized this 10,000 man, 300 man, and that piqued his interest. And he decided this was an opportunity to make a film about the goings on down in Cuba. It was also an opportunity for him to make a very big tax loss and write off all these tax debts to the IRS.
Now that's a question I was going to ask you, because the actual film Cuban Rebel Girls was considered one of the worst films up there with an Ed Wood production.
Oh, absolutely.
And would you say that he deliberately tried to do that as a tax write off?
Well, I would say that's how he started. I would say that he I know that's how he started, but I would say that. He started to believe his own publicity. I think he because he was always, he was an adventurer, and when he started to learn more about Castro, he became intrigued by him, and he thought, well, I could probably make something of this. But it all just there was no planning in the film. There was no money behind it. The director was someone who had been his pilot. He was a very nice fellow, Barry Mann. He was a very nice fellow, and he was a World War II fighter ace and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But he was not a film director. This was his first film.
Right.
He went on to make quite a few others after that, and they were all terrible. There was Nude Las Vegas. That was one of his better ones. Rocket Attack USA, that was another one. He made some terrible films, and this was his first, and probably the worst. I watch it for research purposes, but you wouldn't want to watch it for entertainment.
Wow.
You wanted a good laugh.
Well, look, I mean, I'm at the point, I just got the book a couple of days ago, and I'm at around the point where, you know, he's basically, Barry's arrived, and he's literally just getting everything together, but thus far, as I've been reading the book, like, Earl struggled to even write a script, and Ernest Hemingway's pulled him to pieces about his ability to write. The whole thing seems pretty much destined for failure. So, the point where I'm at, he's developing this interest in Castro. So eventually he meets Castro. What's the attraction between the two of them?
Well, Castro, from Errol's point of view, he has been an artificial hero in all these films, but he always believed himself to be capable of being a genuine hero. And he sought adventure. He used to, before he went to Hollywood, he was an adventurer. If you've ever read my Wicked Ways, you know he did all sorts of adventurous things when he was a young man. And then he got to Hollywood, and he became too valuable a commodity to allow the Warner Brothers to allow him to go off and have too many adventures. The closest he got to it for the 20 years he was big in Hollywood were sailing around the world when he took off in his boat, and he would just literally sail around the world. But that was in a drunken stupor. Half the time he'd had too much to drink and so on. So it wasn't exactly an adventure. It was an escape. Yeah. He also took himself to the Spanish Civil War. Right. Now his intentions were fairly honourable. He went there to report on the from the Loyalist side. If it was today, you would say he was embedded with the Loyalist. The left wing side of the Spanish Civil War.
Was that for a Hearst newspaper?
Yes, for the Hearst newspaper. Yeah. He was an acquaintance of Hearst because Hearst used to cultivate friendships with all the Hollywood stars. Mm. He had that big castle down at St. Simeon.
Yep.
And Errol Flynn was a regular guest in St. Simeon. Now, of course, Hearst wouldn't publish his stories because when he read them, they were all left wing, and of course Hearst, you know, he was a fascist. So he said he wouldn't print them. The way Errol got his stories published was Errol was also a friend of the Roosevelts, and he got Eleanor Roosevelt to champion him, and the stories end up being published in other magazines.
Wow. So he ends up down here. I mean, without giving away too much of the plot, he's down in Cuba. He's going to film this film. He's hanging out with Castro. This is an interesting part of history which you've chosen to write about, because not a lot of people know exactly what the goings on were down there and why he had to leave in a bit of a hurry, I gather.
Yes, that's right. Now there's all sorts of speculation about why he had to leave in a hurry. But the fact is he did. The other thing is that Fidel, immediately after his victory, which came on New Year's Day 1959, immediately after his victory, when all the foreign correspondents came down to Cuba to report on this revolution, they were asking him about Errol Flynn, because Errol had actually released... He was the man who released the story to the world.
Yeah.
He was the only person... It all happened so quickly in Cuba. Batista did a moonlight flit, and suddenly Castro was the new leader of the country. Now, it took everyone by surprise, including Castro. Mm. So there were no reporters on the spot. Well, Errol Flynn was on the spot.
Right.
And he had some journalistic background.
Yeah.
Fancied himself as a foreign correspondent a bit. In fact, that's what he's filmed. He played the foreign correspondent in the American correspondent in the film that he was making.
Right.
So he wrote the story and filed it.
Mm.
So the news was broken to the rest of the world by Errol Flynn. So when all the genuine correspondents came down, they wanted to know what Errol Flynn's part in all this was. And Castro was happy to say, yes, Errol Flynn was here, and he was fighting. He was with us. He was fighting. He was with us and fighting amongst us, which he wasn't actually fighting. But,
and what was the reaction by the world to Errol Flynn doing this report? Because he was a bit on the nose by the late 50s, wasn't he?
Well, yes, although he there was always... Look, there was always most people had a sort of a soft spot for Errol. I mean, they still do. Even now, especially women, when you... Women who are old enough to remember what it was like then, they know what he was like, they know what he got up to, they know all the character flaws he had, yeah. But they still get that look in their eyes, ah, yes, but he was such a rogue. Yeah. You know? So there was still a lot of interest. Oh, I shouldn't say a lot of interest. There wasn't a lot of interest in him. There was still... they still had a soft spot for him.
Now, I was interested to know, just after reading some of this book and going into some of the looking for some of the photographs of Errol at the time, just so I could kind of picture it, because by that stage he's nearing 50, isn't he, or
yeah.
just over?
Yep.
And his looks were a little bit different. Although I thought he could have actually made a pretty good leading man as an older character, but he seemed to be a little bit obsessed with his looks going downhill, although he seemed to pretend not to care. I was interested in the fact that the boat that he was actually on at the time was still a pretty large boat, so he wasn't exactly a pauper, was he?
Well, in our terms, no, but in his terms, he was. I mean, this is a man who was the highest paid performer in Hollywood for many years, and all he had left by this stage was that boat. Now, that boat was the largest privately owned yacht in the world.
It's about 118 feet, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. It's still around. It's still around. The Zaka. And but that and some property in Jamaica, that was about all he had left. And even the property in Jamaica, there wasn't... He had a hotel there and all sorts of... had a ranch and... But most of that had gone. All his American property had gone.
Wow.
His big home, he had this wonderful home which he really loved up in the Hollywood Hills on Mulholland Drive.
Mm.
Now, Lily Demeter, his first wife, got that.
Right.
But that was 15 years after they were divorced. She got that.
Right.
So she pursued him until he died. She was still pursuing him.
Yeah. Now, after in the book, after he takes off, and eventually he does die, because this is in the final year of his life. What's the timeline we're talking about after he leaves Cuba? Is it soon after, or
He leaves Cuba in Castro marched into Havana on the 8th of January. He took a week to have a victory parade from the mountains in the east, right up through the country to the to Havana. So he arrived on the 8th of January in 1959. Well, Errol was chased out a few days later.
Yeah.
And Castro, for his part, started to deny that Errol Flynn was ever there. So the reporters that he'd been saying that he'd been happy to say that Errol Flynn was with him. Pardon me. A couple of days later, he was saying he was never here. I don't know where that. I've never even met him.
Well, it's an incredible book from the point of view that I particularly love is that you get inside the head of Errol Flynn, and I think you really managed to just capture his personality in writing. So I was pleasantly surprised, not really knowing too much about the book, to open it up, and then there's Errol speaking to me. I just love that, to hear his side of the story. I thought that was just a really nice touch.
Well, it's interesting. Look, I'll tell you how that happened. Look, I wrote the whole book in the third person,
right?
And that was in the first draft. And when I'd finished with it, by the time I'd finished, I mean, Errol was so alive to me that I thought I was missing a trick. So I went back and rewrote the whole thing in his voice, and it got, for me, in terms of the enjoyment of the writing, it just got better and better.
Well, the book is out right now, Errol Fidel and the Cuban Rebel Girls. Thanks, Boyd. Fascinating stuff. As we get back into the music right now. And from the Kings of Jingling album, the Martini Kings with The Christmas Song.
Thank you. amé mucho.
Agent 86.
86, report to headquarters immediately.
Just a minute, who is this?
This is the chief. Who else would be calling you on your shoe?
Nation with Coop Cooper, Les Baxter, Quiet Village, Esquivel before that, and Besame Mucho. The Sydney Festival's coming up in January, and an interesting show for all the horror movie buffs out there. It's called Dracula, and it's based on the Universal Pictures 1931 film with the original music by Philip Glass, performed by Philip Glass and the Kronos Quartet, one of the most influential composers of our time. Philip Glass breathes new life into the 1931 Bela Lugosi film with a live performance of his own score, rich in thrills, loaded with suspense. This is coming up on January 14, and a good one for the old-school Dracula fans and the modern-day vampire groupies as well. They've got early screenings as well as the late-night screenings as well. It's going to be over at the opulent grandeur of the State Theatre, January 14. Tonight, your chance to win the latest Royal Crown Review CD, giving away their Christmas album, Don't Be a Grinch This Year. I just love this CD. I've been listening to it all this week. the marvellous humour, the swinging tracks, a real winner for the holidays, lots of great original stuff there, and it's a lot of fun. I have a copy to give away to the first person who emails thecocktailnation@gmail.com with the answer to this question. Who is the new female lead singer that recently joined the band? A gal just joined them recently, and she's on this album. Answer correctly as the first person to email through, and it's yours. Here they are with Christmas Lights on the Cocktail Nation.
Round the ceiling softly climbing, winking, sparkling, glinting, gleaming, painting patterns while we're dreaming. To creep, the sun has gone to sleep. We're waiting on the moon tonight. Forget the lunar light, we'll have a room of rainbows spying from beneath the covers. Colored bubbles dance like lovers.
Spy, because the CIA denies knowledge of it. That's gotta be right, I guess.
Thank you.
Dr. Nation for Tiki Shark and Andre Costalantes and Moon of Manacora. Grace Knight in there as well with Sway. News from a good buddy of the show, Bill Wrights, who wrote to me to tell me that for the month of December, for this month, he is offering his first Pulp Fiction novella, Strip Poker, as a free download. It's available as a paperback for only $5.95, but you can get it for free as a download and check out some of Bill's fantastic writing. Gracing the cover of this illustrated and incredibly pulpy adventure is none other than the lovely Sid Devine, the Golden Girl of the West. And if you enjoy the novella, post a comment or short review. Bill would greatly appreciate that. The website that you need is worldespionagebureau.com. Follow the links and you can down your copy today and be sure to tell a friend. Time for our segment, Ask Coop. This one is from Julie in San Francisco, who writes, Dear Coop, my partner and I have been together for 11 years. We each have our own apartment, but we only live 5 minutes from each other, so we see each other as often as possible. We want to get married, but we want to live separately. Is this strange? You live together, you don't live together. Does it really matter? As long as you're a happy couple, there's no relationship rules other than wring out the kitchen sponge after you finish sponging up milk and never pick your teeth after dinner with those pointy and toenail clippers. Certainly not somebody else's. I know couples who have to live apart for most of the time because of overseas job commitments, and they're quite happy, loving couples. They talk to each other regularly on the phone, perhaps on Skype. I know couples also who live together in the same house and never actually talk to each other at all day. They sleep in separate beds at night and only ever touch accidentally when they both reach for the TV remote at the same time. So coupling isn't any weirder than any else's coupling. Get married, live 5 minutes apart from each other. Just pretend you're obscenely rich and living in two wings of some massive stately manor with a bus route connecting your bedrooms, the BP Express petrol station on the corner, or the hallway to the laundry. I hope that helps. Don't forget, you can always email your problem to me simply by using the email address thecocktailnation@gmail.com. Right now, the SG Sound.
Design a new type of game.
The Cocktail Nation.
Thank you.
Dr. Nation with the Three Sons, Pig of My Heart. And a quick note from hipsters in the Chicago area. Here is a cool lounge to attend, the M Lounge, 1520 South Wabash Avenue. And the website is mloungechicago.com. Came across this one a little while ago. Recommendation from a friend. It's an intimate martini lounge featuring jazz music, an array of specialty martinis, fine spirits, live jazz performance held every Tuesday and Wednesday from 7 to 10. It's got a very cool bar with some fantastic decor, and I'm told by very reliable sources that the drinks are spectacular. Time for a look at the world of Swank, the CD release party for Royal Crown Review coming up on Sunday. It's at the legendary Jakarta Club. Tickets are already selling fast for this event. And you might like to get along to that and join the band for their Don't Be a Grinch this year official CD release party. Speaking of Royal Crown Review, they're kicking off their tour is two. I just love this band. They're just such a fantastic swing and Vegas band. They remind me of a Louis Prima type act. And of course, whilst I suppose they're technically swing, they've certainly got a real Vegas feel to them. And that's what I really, really dig about Royal Crown Review. I've been seeing them for years. So check them out. They're going to be performing right across the world, Greece, Spain, and the UK, and Australia, coming here for the Sydney Festival in January. Do grab your tickets for the Waitiki 7 show at Don the Beachcombers, Huntington Beach, coming up Thursday, December 30, Friday, December 31. And the big news, as we found out last week from talking to Randy Wong, is that the Millionaire and Brother Cleve are going to be down there performing as well. This is like the first time any members of Combustible Edison have actually got together and played, to my knowledge, together since their breakup in the early 90s. So this is quite historic. And, of course, you can check out our premiere Exotica band, Waitiki 7. It's on the Beachcombers, Huntington Beach. Ricky Derrick, he's got some shows coming up. He's got a special annual New Year's Eve Ring-a-Ding-Ding show coming up, the Scat Jazz Lounge. Mark Copeland wrote to me a little while ago to tell me that he's going to be playing February 26th at the Hollywood Palladium, recently restored. He's playing with the Pat Longo Big Band on a Saturday night, February 26th. This is a fantastic venue. You've got to check that out. April 8th, Cherry Pop and Daddies are back in Sydney at the Factory Theatre, and on the 9th in Melbourne at the Corner Hotel. Coming up, I've got some cool blogs as we head to the Cocktail Nation blogosphere. And right now, Ray Anthony with Dragnet. We'll be right back.
Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and the children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white. Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and the children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry. Christmases, may all your Christmases, may all your Christmases be white. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with you.
Cocktail Nation with Michael Bublé and his version of White Christmas. Michael Bublé doesn't always get much of a run on the Cocktail Nation. I know he's got many, many fans out there who do listen to the Cocktail Nation. I suppose I just never really find very much of his that I really, really like, but I do like this song.
This is Deep Space Mission 9. We're now entering the blogosphere of the Cocktail Nation.
This week's blog is from one of my favourite TV shows online, that is Tiki Bar TV, a great blog to find out what is going on the show, plus a cool little social media app as well. You get to know others in the Tiki Bar, tikibartv.blogspot.com. And with all of the blogs that I follow, I do link them on my Blogspot page, cocktailnation.blogspot.com. So if you've got a blog, follow me. And you can also check out who I'm following as well. Well, that's it for the show this week. I'll leave you with Jimmy Vargas and Zoetica Blues. Stay up.
Ursulette Chanton, my tea's for pleasure. You think her heart's strung on simply fishnets and feathers. Zoetica blues, just a ghost as the floor shows past. Zoetica blues, Zoetica. liquor. She torched the tarot, scorched the wrong fillers. Never scored her Sinatra, just blowed out shrunken jazz dressers. Zodiacal blues, just a ghost of a mannequin at first. Zodiacal blues, Zodiacal, just swings with a lonely crowd, swings with the only crowd. Ring it, ding it with the lonely crowd. Dee da da da. Sweethearts and fillings, oh, crooked on opiate schemes, delirium, you're a screams. Dee da da da. Just swings with a lonely crowd, swings with the only crowd. Ring it, ding it with the Broadway hounds. Da-da-da-da. Sweethearts and fillings, or crooked on opiate schemes, delirium, urine screams, mandatrina. Just swings with a lonely crowd. Ring it, ding it with the only crowd. Ring it, ding it with the only crowd. Ah, so out of heart. Sweethearts and fellines, or crooked on opiate schemes, delirium, neuro screams. Zee-ba-da-da.
XLV, Schnecksville, Pennsylvania. VX.